Blog Talk Radio.
This is Cheap for Yourself. Now, here's Gio.
Hi, welcome to Cheap for Yourself. Great to have you with us, wherever you happen to be in the world at this moment. Today we're going to be talking about depression. Now, if you've been listening to these interviews for any length of time, you know that Cheap for Yourself champions health and wellness. We emphasize non-medical, non-traditional ways of achieving it. For a long time now, the go-to methods of treating depression have been pharmaceuticals. But our guest on today's program says it's actually our relationships that offer the most effective path to healing. Cindy Stolberg is a psychologist who has counseled individuals, couples, groups, and families for more than 40 years. She's co-author, along with Ronald J. Frey, of Feeling Better, Beat Depression, and Improve Your Relationships with Interpersonal Psychotherapy. And I'm happy to have Cindy with us today. Cindy, before we get to the heart of the book, let's get a definition of interpersonal psychotherapy, or IPT.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to you and to your listeners today. IPT, interpersonal psychotherapy, is one of kind of the best kept secrets in psychology because it's been around for quite some time. It was developed in the 1960s by Drs. Klerman and Wiseman. And fundamentally, if you have good, meaningful, constructive relationships, you're going to feel better. And if you're struggling with your mood or you're depressed and you have good, meaningful relationships, you're going to feel better much more quickly. And really, it's a research-driven therapy that within 8 to 12 weeks, you will have learned and developed skills that you can use to really have those relationships that you're looking for. So that's really the very brief version of IPT to start with.
Okay, well, the book is divided into weeks rather than chapters. So
yes.
Is it fair to say that one should start at the beginning and work through rather than try to sort of cherry pick anything that's familiar to them?
Well, you can. I mean, I think the weeks is primarily because we're modeling the way the model is delivered, and what the focus is that you begin to look at your interpersonal relationships. You identify who the people are in your life that are causing you or contributing to any of your stress or difficulties, and then we pick an area to focus on. You know, we don't really deal with every problem you've ever had within that short period of time. We pick one that's current, and we work on that together with the reader, and then you know exactly what you did to help yourself feel better and work on those issues so that you can apply it to the next problem or the next problem or the next issue that comes up. So really, the weeks is like a step-by-step way to feel better after a period of time, relatively short period of time, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Well, in keeping with that, decades of sitcoms and bad late-night movies gave us some of the stereotypical pictures of a therapy session, a Freud lookalike doctor listening to a couch-based patient talk about their mother. I'll give you a chance here to blow up some of those myths. It sounds like we could replace a lot of that old-timey therapy with what we're doing here today, what we're talking about.
Absolutely. I think certainly with IPT, one of the things that I found very, very exciting when I first learned it many, many years ago, and I think something that the clients that I work with and the readers we wanted to share with, was it's very practical, structured, but still collaborative way of doing things. So yeah, as you're talking about lying on a couch, that really isn't. It's not about the person just talking aimlessly or even talking. You can still go to many therapists today and just talk about your problems over and over and over again. But what this model particularly does is help you within a time-limited, you know, process to say, do I want to make a change or do I want to keep doing things the way I'm doing them and still continue to feel crappy? And, you know, that certainly is up to the individual or the reader, but we're really hopeful and we're really encouraging to say to people, you know, they have endless opportunities and possibilities with our help to feel different, try different things, see how it works. And we give a lot of very practical, specific suggestions in the book that people can pick and choose from. So I think that's it's a huge difference from what you're talking about, which is a more psychoanalytic, you know, kind of approach.
You say in the book that there are four different problem areas in our lives that contribute to depression. You want to tell us what those are, please?
Absolutely. The model really identifies the four areas, which are interpersonal disputes or conflicts. If you're having a conflict with someone, and it doesn't have to even be where you're outright always fighting with them, but if you've even given up or there's a simmering tension going on, that's one area. The other area that can contribute to depression is unresolved bereavement. So if someone who was close to you died many, many years ago, but you're still feeling as badly as you felt when they first died. If you're going through a transition, you know, transitions like you've lost a job or a huge transition of having a baby and how that becomes a huge change in people's lives, or you move to a new city, that's another area called transition. And then the last one is really when most of your mood is affected by feelings of loneliness and isolation, where you've had difficulty over time either making friends, relationships, or sustaining relationships. So those really are the four areas that are very common for people who are struggling with their mood to experience. And we pick one or two at the most of those and then set a goal and work on that, rather than working on everything all at one time.
You mentioned isolation, and I'm thinking about social media. What are you seeing today as far as people's reaction to social, what it's doing to them, social media?
Well, it's really interesting because I think with social media, it feels like people want a connection with other people. They want to tell them what they're doing. They want to see what other people are doing. But it doesn't always feel like a real relationship. So I think, and it's very interesting, I even read something yesterday that for many young people, they were doing a survey in a local kind of school board where I live, and they said that adolescents feel extremely lonely. And so I think even, and it's kind of surprising, right, because they're the ones who are probably hooked into social media more than anybody else, or adolescents. But people aren't feeling that same experience that comes from a real face-to-face, you know, meaningful time together. I think it's a, you know, there's nothing wrong with connecting with people in that way, but it's not a good substitute for spending time with people and doing, and also talking to one another about how you're feeling. So social media could be an issue, too, as to are we only presenting ourselves in a certain light versus are we actually talking to somebody about feeling crappy or struggling with something. That's another issue that I think we have to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. At this point, someone may be listening and wondering about some things going on in their lives, some of the signs that may be pointing in the directions we're talking about. You have a list in the book of 13 signs that you may be depressed. Are any of those especially important or that you see more often or stand out above the others?
I think it depends on the severity of it. So I think that's usually the thing that's the most important. I mean, I think we all at times, you know, might experience, you know, difficulty sleeping or eating too much or too little or not necessarily feeling like you want to, you know, go out and do the things you normally enjoy. But it's usually when depression becomes more of a problem, it's when it lasts longer, when it's more intense, when there are more symptoms than, like you say, if it's like 10 as opposed to 3, then I think people need to pay attention. It's also our, you know, interpersonal psychotherapy doesn't have to be just for people who are depressed. If you're experiencing, you know, stress or conflict in your relationships, if you're feeling lonely, if you're struggling with something that you know, an adjustment, like I say, when you have a new baby, some people do get, you know, significantly, seriously depressed, but then I can even recall when I first had my kids, it was a big change in my life. So a lot of the things we talk about in our book and suggestions we make aren't just for people who are depressed. They really are for anybody who wants to feel better than they're feeling right now.
If someone hearing this feels that they're ready to make these changes to their situation, what would you say to them? Where is there such a thing as a starting point? I mean, can they take action right now?
Absolutely, absolutely. They can. They can basically, as I say, identify. Kind of one of the first steps is to understand what they're feeling, and we help people really articulate and identify what's bothering them. So oftentimes, and you know, I don't know, you may experience this too, we'll kind of feel crummy or we won't feel great, but we might say, oh, I don't really know what's bothering me, right? So I think the first step is we try to help people by asking them questions to identify what is it? Is it somebody who, we take people really through yesterday or the day before. It's a very here and now model. Where it's not, we don't talk about what happened a year ago. We say, what was the most stressful interaction you had this week? And you begin to examine it very closely. What did I say to the other person? What did they say to me? What was I hoping would be conveyed? What did I want out of the situation that I didn't get? So we ask people to really hone it in and be very concrete about what's happened, and begin to look at what they're feeling and to be able to put, you know, words to that, label that, and how can I express that to the other person in as constructive a way as possible. So that's a really, you know, a really good place to start if you're, you know, if you're saying, you know, something needs to change for me. I don't want to keep doing it this way. I don't want to keep fighting with my partner. I don't want to keep yelling at my kids, right? You know, I'd like to do it differently. And so we begin by looking at the interaction that's occurring right here and right now.
Our guest on This Chief of Yourself is Cindy Stolberg, co-author with Ronald J. Frey of Feeling Better, Beat Depression, and Improve Your Relationships with Interpersonal Psychotherapy. I guess it's only natural to have expectations when you're working on this, trying to make these changes. Talk about the role that expectation plays in both in depression and also in healing.
I think certainly in terms of expectations, that's one of the words and one of the concepts about IPT that I love the most, because I think it helps not blame people, right? So if I instead say, oh, well, I'm right and you're wrong, then that's not going to get us very far. But if I ask you what your expectations are of me in this relationship, and I express to you what I would hope for or expect in our relationship, then we can begin the conversation. We can really understand each other and what each other wants, and we can work towards trying to, you know, be helpful and trying to say, yeah, I agree with that. If I say to you, you know, my expectation is that when you come home from work that you don't sit on your phone for a half an hour, that at least we sit down and talk about our day. If you're in agreement with that, if you're okay and that's an expectation of yours as well, then things are going to be better between us because our expectations are going to be met. If our expectations are very different, and, you know, something like, I'll give you an example. One of the things that happened with myself and my husband is he isn't the most talkative guy. So when we were going to go on a long road trip, and I said, well, you know, will you please talk to me when we're, you know, on our way, you know, to this function that's going to take us 5 hours to drive there. Well, for me to expect him to be, you know, talk for 5 hours is kind of unrealistic. So instead, we solved the problem by him saying, you know, why don't you fly there? I'll drive and you fly. And so it's not like we're bad. It's not like we're going to get divorced because he's such a great guy and he's so wonderful. And we're celebrating our 45th wedding anniversary, you know, on Saturday. But guess what? It was better for me to fly and for him to drive, you know, to be annoyed and mad at him for not talking to me the whole way, right?
Wow.
So I think really having realistic expectations. If you feel that someone should meet your expectations all the time in the way you want them to meet them, when you want them to meet them, it's going to be pretty hard for you to find that person. So I think you have to really check and decide, you know, check with other people. Say, this is something I expect. Does that make sense to you? Do you think I'm being, you know, expecting too much? So that's another important aspect that we help the reader look at, is to look at, what's realistic to expect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who can help you meet those expectations? And if not that person, maybe someone else can, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I really like that in the book you offer a section called Guy Talk, which I guess was pretty much Ron's bailiwick, you know. But guys do hear about needing to let out their feelings, and assuming that that's true, in your experience, how are guys doing at opening up nowadays?
I think they're doing better. I certainly see the younger generation doing better than the older generation. My son-in-law and my son certainly are probably better at it. I think it's nice because, my colleague Ron Frey, who's a wonderful guy, and we just love kind of teaching and working together, you know, he's able to offer that perspective, to talk to people about how hard it can be for some guys. It's easy for guys to get angry, but I think that's not such a hard thing. But I think for people, guys or women or anyone, to be able to say, what's really under that anger? Am I really sad? Is there an unmet need I have? Am I frustrated? Am I feeling upset about something? That is a huge accomplishment, to be able to identify the feelings that are underneath that initial maybe anger and be able to express it. I think that's becoming easier over time, and I think certainly I notice, I watch my daughter try to teach her sons as well, right? So the boys are getting better at expressing their feelings, and to me that's a very valuable, important thing to do, to try to be able to talk to one another, to listen to one another. And I think the other thing that people can do is really ask. When I ask my clients, or we ask the reader, to say, do you know how the other person is feeling? Have you asked them how they're doing with something? So, it's easy sometimes, we want to tell the other person what's going on for us, but you really, it's a two-way street. You have to check out what's going on with them too, you know? I don't know how you see it in terms of men being able to talk about their feelings, you know, whether you think it's getting better or...
Well, for me, it's never, honestly, seriously, it's never been a problem. I mean, I probably say too much. Right. I give away at the store, right, and then I get hammered right with it, and then, well, I don't want to go down that road, but, it's... I mean, I just have diarrhea of the mouth when it comes to talking up. But I think it's important to be clear, just to be clear,
yes.
And I think that's when you can... have, I don't know if expectations is too strong a word, but they say you teach people how to treat you. And if you're clear, you know, you're either going to get the treatment you want, or, you know, you may have, like you say, you may have to move on.
Right. And also it depends on, you can model it too, right? Mm-hmm. You can treat someone else with respect. You can treat someone else by listening to what they have to say. You know, you can treat someone else kindly by supporting them when they need it. And then it's that plus your willingness to say, this would help me if you did this, it would help me, you know, feel better when we discuss the kids and how we're going to handle things, right? So there are ways to do it, you're right, by asking clearly for it, and then also by demonstrating and showing someone else the kind of care or treatment that you would like to have, right?
Mm-hmm. That goes hand in hand with what you wrote in the book about rehearsing those important exchanges.
Yes.
That's part of expectation too, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, for sure, because I think in terms of what we try to help people do too, is we can't predict exactly how someone is going to respond when you try to talk with them, right? First of all, you may feel nervous or anxious about telling someone else what you need or want or what's important to you or how you feel. So rehearsing either with someone else, talking to a friend and saying, you know, I'm going to talk to my boss about this problem at work. I'd like to kind of run it by you and see what you think. Or you can look in the mirror and have a conversation, or you can record it and then listen to see if what you're saying makes sense, if you're the tone of voice you're using or how you're presenting things, you know, you want to change it a little bit. So that's an opportunity to rehearse. And then we also really constantly throughout the book let people know that you need to kind of evaluate what's the best outcome that might happen, what's the worst outcome, and what's the most realistic, so that no matter what happens, number one, you can at least be proud of yourself for trying, right, for having the courage to express what you need to say to someone else. And number two, if someone doesn't respond positively to you, then you won't be so surprised. You'll know what to do at that point. If someone, you know, the likelihood of expecting someone to go, sure, great, terrific, no problem, I'll give you that raise, you know, we'll give you the corner office, you know, that might not happen either. But there may be something more realistic that will happen, and that should be what you hope to accomplish, because that's usually what happens when you speak to other people about what you want and what you'd like and what you'd need. That tends to be the case. So we help people rehearse by knowing what to expect so that they're not going to be disappointed when, you know, the best thing didn't happen. So they're not going to be devastated when, you know, someone doesn't respond to them. And they have a realistic idea of what they can expect to occur when they approach someone else.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's why rehearsal can be useful and helpful as well.
Also, you're right that the skills learned in the book can translate into ways to raise healthy children. That's very encouraging news. What are some of those ways?
Absolutely. And anyone with kids knows the challenges, and certainly at different stages, right? So I think, you know, being able to communicate clearly and effectively with your children is a huge bonus. For example, if you're, you know, many parents, like we were talking about, you know, argue with their kids about screen time. So being able to approach your child in a way that you sit down with them and you say, you know, you can say to your kid, you know, you may be surprised that I don't enjoy yelling at you, but I'm sure you don't enjoy me doing that either. Let's talk about this. Let's discuss how we're going to handle these things in our family. I'd like to listen to you and understand what's important to you, and I expect you will listen to me and understand why I'm, you know, talking to you about the amount of screen time you should be having or the amount of time you should be spending on your schoolwork. So really being able to help people step by step communicate clearly, you know, to their child, whether they're, you know, 15 years old and they're talking about screen time, or whether it's the five-year-old who's throwing their shoes all over the place or not picking up their toys, right? So I think the strategies and the skills of clear communication, of collaborating, of asking them what's important to them, what do they need from you. And it's not like, you know, they're going to say, well, I need, you know, $10 more a week in my allowance. It may be, well, I'd like you to let me know 10 minutes before I have to turn the screen off. That would help me instead of you coming in and yelling at the last minute. Or if I say I just need to finish this game, you know, can we do that? So it's really giving the kids an opportunity to just even express themselves and feel like they're being heard or listened to can make a huge difference in you working together with them, as opposed to it being a battleground on an ongoing basis.
What points would you like most for readers to take away from this book?
Well, I think the most important thing is really to understand the importance of your relationships in your life, you know, that those are really meaningful and something that it's really worth putting your time and, you know, an effort into, that their, you know, IPT is something that's a really valuable, practical model of therapy. There's a lot of common sense in it. And if they would want to either try it out in the book, or if they want to, you know, get help from a clinician to find therapists who are skilled at this model of therapy, those are the kinds of things we'd like people to take away from this book, is to share this really kind of valuable, important model. It's recommended by psychiatric and psychological associations as very, very effective for mood difficulties. For it's really, even currently, they're doing a lot of work on addressing post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm. It can be very helpful without having to re-expose people to the trauma. It's great for postpartum depression. It's an extremely valuable model that we really hope we'll be able to share with as many readers and your listeners as possible.
And the website is interpersonalpsychotherapy.com.
And yes, and feelingbetterthebook.com. So people can find out more about us at interpersonalpsychotherapy.com. They can find out more about the book at feelingbetterthebook.com. And we'd love to hear from your listeners and, you know, talk to them about what's going on and what they're wanting to feel better about in their lives.
Mm-hmm. The book is Feeling Better: Beat Depression and Improve Your Relationships with Interpersonal Psychotherapy, from our guest Cindy Stolberg and her co-author Ronald J. Frey. Cindy, thanks for being on with us today and for showing us a different and very encouraging way to cope with depression. I'll be following your work, and I hope you'll come back and talk with us again soon.
It would be our pleasure, my pleasure, and I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today, so thank you very much.
I'll link to Cindy's website at cheeforyourself.com. Make sure you subscribe to Genulines when you're on the site. You'll get all of the posts and content meant to keep you on the path of a genuine life. Genulines also lets you know the show schedule and guest information, so you'll be kept up to date on who's going to be on and when. I want to thank you very much for being with us and for liking and following Chi for Yourself on social media. That is always appreciated. So be well, and I'll talk to you soon.